Wonder, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Carol Rosen, director of the Going Home Coalition of the Arc of Illinois. But first, disability news for the week of March 11th, 2024. According to a new report prepared for the Social Security Administration by the research firm Mathematica, thousands of children with disabilities who may qualify for government assistance and they are not receiving it. Researchers found that between 2013 and 2021, the number of children receiving supplemental security income benefits fell by 20%. The report said, quote, because people still need services, the declining enrollment suggests that there might be more children who qualify for SSI but are not enrolled, end quote. Researchers found that over 110,000 children may be eligible for SSI, an increase of nearly 10% over current program participation, but the increase could be as high as 55%. In general, the report found that children who likely qualify but aren't currently receiving SSI experience barriers to enrollment, use more health care than current beneficiaries, and often have chronic conditions suggesting that they have developmental delays. The report concluded, quote, if Medicaid and SSI data could be connected in the future, it might help identify children who are potentially eligible for SSI to conduct targeted outreach. Using data could also help streamline the application process, meaning more families could be connected to the resources they need, end quote. Officials from the Social Security Administration said they're looking at possible ways to act on the recommendations and said that it is working with other agencies to identify and reach people who might be eligible for SSI. A spokesperson said they are beginning to see, quote, substantial increases in child SSI applications, end quote. Nationally, nearly a million children were enrolled in SSI at the end of 2022, according to data from the Social Security Administration, receiving an average of $731.99 per month. Another report released last week says that the United States system of disability services remains under severe pressure as workforce shortages and other challenges continue. Waiting lists for home and community-based services rose 3.3% in 2023, accounting for almost 500,000 people. Numbers may be even higher with states using terminology like referral lists and registries rather than waiting lists for people who are waiting for supports. The annual report, known as the Case for Inclusion, analyzes nearly 80 indicators to determine how well states are supporting people with developmental disabilities in the community. It's written by United Cerebral Palsy in collaboration with the American Network of Community Options and Resources, otherwise known as ANCHOR. That is a group that represents disability service providers nationally. At the heart of the challenges facing the disability service system is difficulty attracting and retaining direct support professionals who help people with disabilities live in the community. Last year's survey found that nearly all service providers experienced moderate to severe staffing shortages, with almost half of providers ending some programs or services. Also in the survey, 77% of providers said they were turning away new referrals, and 72% said they were struggling to meet quality standards. Advocates are concerned that the situation could get worse as emergency funds provided by the federal government during the pandemic are set to expire, and proposed regulations may increase costs for providers without any increase in Medicaid reimbursement rates. One example is that a proposed rule making more workers eligible for overtime could cost providers up to $1 billion in the first year if it's finalized. Advocates have also noted that 17 states in Washington, D.C. have all closed their state-run institutions, with Kentucky joining the list last year. In addition, the findings show that the situation is far from uniform across the country. 80% of people on waiting lists in 2023 lived in just five states: Texas, South Carolina, Florida, North Carolina, and Illinois, of course. And Texas alone accounted for nearly two-thirds of people with disabilities on such lists across the country. Researchers are encouraging federal policymakers to increase funding for Medicaid home and community-based services and to require states to review reimbursement rates regularly to ensure that they are adequate. And finally, a rule proposed this month by the U.S. Department of Transportation would require better training for airline staff and contractors who assist people with disabilities, as well as those who handle wheelchairs. The rule also requests larger penalties for airlines and details steps they must take if a wheelchair or another assistive device is mishandled. The proposal would make such an event an automatic violation of the Air Carrier Access Act if airlines damage or delay the return of a wheelchair or another assistive device, which would, in turn, allow the Transportation Department to more easily impose penalties. In 2023 alone, data from the Transportation Department shows that airlines mishandled almost 12,000 wheelchairs and scooters. Under the proposal, they would be required to immediately notify passengers of their right to file a claim with the airline, receive a loaner wheelchair, and choose who they want to repair or replace their device. It would also give passengers the right to choose if they want the airline to handle repairs or replacement, or if they prefer to make their own arrangements at the airline's expense. If a wheelchair is delayed, the proposal would require that it arrive within 24 hours of the passenger. Airlines would also be required to assist passengers with disabilities in a manner that is, quote, safe and dignified, end quote. The rule includes new standards for onboard wheelchairs and a requirement that passengers are notified when their personal wheelchair is loaded or unloaded from an airplane's cargo compartment. If a person's wheelchair does not fit on the plane, they would need to be immediately notified. The proposed rule will be up for public comment until the end of April at regulations.gov. And that's the news for this week. And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm happy to welcome back to the program Carol Rosen, a friend of mine who is very active with the Going Home Coalition, an important group here in Illinois. Welcome to the program, Carol.
Thank you so much, Vicki. So great to be here.
It's good to have you. So why don't we start out by you introducing yourself for those people who may not have heard you on the show before.
Okay, thank you. I'm Carol Rosen. I am the Going Home Coalition Manager at the Arc of Illinois. And the Going Home Coalition has been around for over a decade. We're a diverse statewide network of self-advocates, families, community service providers, and allies. And what we do is we advocate to create systems change within Illinois, which includes bolstering and advocating for robust community systems to transition away from institutional living. And we want people in the community empowered with fair and equal choices with, you know, whatever circumstances that they have, because we believe that community is strengthened by diversity, inclusion, and accessibility.
And so you went a while without funding, right? Money.
I think that's a great. Yeah.
So what happened? You back up and running again?
So You're right. We had a really great relationship with the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities, and we had several years of grant funding from them, and that grant ended, and we were really put in a position to run things on our own and ask for donations. And then we acquired Coleman Foundation funding for the next at least several years, we hope. I mean, actually, next several months. And we're hoping that would continue into several years. And, you know, we're always looking for other opportunities for grant funding or to fundraise, because the reality is that we are an advocacy organization and grants are hard to come by.
Oh, that's
so
for
it's
sure.
A great question.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we just knuckled down, and people are really passionate about Going Home Coalition. So we just hung in there, and then we were able to get additional funding.
Well, I remember when the Going Home Coalition first started up, and there were maybe
yes.
10, 15 people on the calls and, you know, very strong advocates. But now you've got, like, how many people are a member of that group? It's huge now.
It is huge, and it's a testament to, like, again, the passion and really amazing advocacy by our supporting participants and organizations. We are over 200 members now. So those include self-advocates, they include organizations, and they include, you know, allies and individuals, parents of people with disabilities. So it's really powerful. So the outreach is pretty amazing.
So how has the work evolved over the years that you've been involved with the Going Home Coalition? How has it changed?
I'll bet you you actually know more about the overall evolution, but I'll give it a stab from, you know, where I came into the picture. Barb Pritchard, who I know you had on your show.
A good friend.
At one point, yes, she's wonderful and does amazing advocacy work. So Barb asked me through the Arc of Illinois to speak at the Capitol Rotunda for an event that Going Home Coalition was doing in 2019. And I was really intrigued by the possibility and the opportunity. So I spoke there, and then I started to participate on Going Home Coalition. And then eventually they lost their manager and I was asked to step in. So what we've done since that time is we've gone through the ending of One Funder and we've gone to funding from the Coleman Foundation. And what I've done to sort of shape the vision of Going Home Coalition, because all the parts were there, is really just knead it and shape it in a way that empowers and educates participants in ways they may not have thought of before, because it's such a vast system. And I want us to have an understanding of ways we can foster, you know, growth of community systems, how systems are different than what we see in the developmental disability system. And we're doing lots of amazing outreach in a lot of different ways. So one of those ways is through really engaging speakers that people don't necessarily have access to. These include people like Senator Julie Morrison, Equip for Equality, IDHS and DDD staff. We also talked about 708 boards and 377 boards, which I know is very near and dear to your heart.
Mm-hmm.
We are also almost midway through a 9-week legislative advocacy series, which is usually a self-advocate and me co-presenting on different issues within legislative advocacy. But it's so important that people are able to have these tools so they can connect with their legislators and really engage civically within their communities. If you want, I'll tell you a little bit about those modules coming up.
Sure.
And so we have gone through how a bill becomes a law in Illinois, and we've done voter education and registration. We talked about looking up your legislators, and we're going to be talking about crafting an elevator speech, arranging a meeting with your legislator, how to submit a witness slip, discussing political issues with civility, which is really important these days, how to become an election judge at polling places, and how a bill becomes a law federally. So these are all ways that we can give back and really empower people to get out there and advocate for issues that are important to you.
And I know it can be discouraging to do this
work, but
but have you seen movement on any front in the past year with people maybe moving a little bit more toward the idea of, you know, maybe closure of an institution might not be a bad thing?
I agree with you, and I think it depends on which lens you look at things through.
Mm-hmm.
So was I delighted that we heard the announcement of the CHOAT transformation and moving people out of CHOAT and into the community? I was delighted. And then, you know, as we have data on that, we've learned that, I believe at the last point I heard about this, there were 25 people who transitioned from CHOAT, and 16 of them were to Murray and Shapiro, which are other state-operated developmental mm-hmm. centers, and 9 people moved into the community. And even within the 9 people that moved into the community, there was a large proportion of them that moved back into parents' homes. So that, to me, is like also cause for concern, because what we're saying is that we want people to be have individual choices in how they live in the community. So we want to foster that as well.
Right.
And then the other thing that sort of gets me is the, you know, we know that the Pritzker administration has made historic investment into the developmental disability system. And yet we're seeing such a disparity between direct support professionals in the community and what people are making who provide supports for people with DD in our state-operated developmental centers. And, you know, there's all kinds of other things that we need to see to really assure that, you know, the CHOAT transformation and whatever movement that provides becomes proof of concept and that can really have people moving into the community in a profound and positive way.
I don't think you can understate the cost of individuals who live in that kind of a system, into the state-operated developmental center system, because it's the states. I don't know if you were listening to the news that I read right before I introduced you, but the 5 states that have the longest and most comprehensive waiting lists for services are also the 5 states, are 5 states that still run state-operated developmental centers.
And I'm really glad you brought that up, because the reality is that, you know, as of March of 2023, there's still actually approximately 15,742 people on a waiting list for services. And those, that need for services, even when people are saying I'm seeking services, is still taking up to 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it really leaves the door wide open that when people are in crises, that, you know, it's, things fail, they could end up housed in an institution, which is never a short stay. I know person after person who are now out, but a short stay is 2 years because the system does not move rapidly. And the other thing I'm seeing a lot is people can't get community supports, and they end up having to move their children into ICFDDs or out of the state.
Yeah. It's really a very sad situation for many families. There are not enough choices.
No, definitely.
So agreed. Just, you know, we do only have a half an hour. I have a couple things that we want to cover here. Yet you're having a fundraiser for the Going Home Coalition. I'd like to hear a little bit about that.
Thank you, Vicki. We are having a fundraiser. But we can get you links if you want to put it on your Facebook page. And we can get emails out if people indicate that they're interested. It's on March 21st at 7:30 p.m. CST. I'm saying that slowly because it's virtual. So people can join really from anywhere and just accommodate the time change. But, you know, this is, again, these are a heavy lift. We're talking about really serious things about people with developmental disabilities and their opportunities to live in the community, or, you know, having to be at risk for having to live in a state operated developmental center. And I really wanted to approach it, which is how could we do something statewide and just really engage as many people as possible. So we're having a virtual comedy night that's going to be airing over Zoom. And we have three really massively talented entertainers. They all have a touch point to disability. And these are Patty Vasquez, who you may know because she also has a weekday radio show in Illinois on WCPT.
Mm-hmm. We have I've heard of Patty, yes.
Yeah, and she actually ran for state representative and works in Susana Mendoza's office now. And we also have a really talented performer, Pamela Schuler, and she has Tourette's. I'm not saying that that's the first thing we should say about Pamela because she's really amazing. And I she's also been on Jewish Matchmaking on Netflix and is nationally renowned for her presentations and her advocacy work, which really engages humor and makes some really important points about inclusion and people's lives with developmental disabilities. And our third performer is Tina Frimmel, and she's tearing it up. She recently performed on Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show, and she does comedy tours not only across the country, but now I believe she's going to hit some international comedy festivals. And she had more or less her mother experienced a really traumatic birth, and Tina has cerebral palsy as a result of that. And she's wonderfully funny and engaging and really makes her experience as a disabled adult living in New York City really a wonderful experience for people to hear her side of her life.
That sounds really good, and it really might surprise a lot of people that there's so much humor related to the disability world. Families have so many funny stories to tell, and so it, you know, it can be hilarious at times, actually. So it's good to look at the other side for sure, because we always talk about things that sound so grim and hard and disappointing, but this sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
And yeah, and I think it gives us all, you know, a lift and energy to keep going forward and doing the more serious work that we are doing.
I will definitely post that link to the Disability Beat Facebook page for sure. Any other things that are going on from the Arc of Illinois that people need to be aware of? I know you've got your annual convention coming up soon.
Yes, we do. And I really recommend people going to the ARC website because there's always, you know, there's such engaging programming through the ARC of Illinois. And, you know, I found it interesting when you were reading the news at first and the whole thing about children getting SSI and that, you know, they're seeing, you know, a dip in people accessing those services. The ARC of Illinois is fantastic about empowering families and individuals with disabilities to really learn the systems that they're going to need from, you know, a very young age through adulthood. And so it's a really great organization to check out and know about their resources.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Anything else that we need to talk about before we're out of time today?
I'm good, but I really want to thank you again. The fundraiser is March 21st at 7:30 p.m. CST, and it's virtual. So please join us, and please, if you want to support Going Home Coalition, we'll give you the website as well. And we would love to have you involved with our advocacy, which is very far-reaching and it's broad-based. We have definite talking points about what we think is important to us, but most important is that you are advocating for issues that are important to you.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. Carol Rosen, director of the Going Home Coalition and a dynamo working on behalf of people with disabilities in the state of Illinois and across the country. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you again, Vicki. Take care.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. No, I stand my ground. Won't be turned around. And I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground. And I won't back down. And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. We have a little extra time, so I'm going to give you some announcements of some important things that are happening. First of all, have you ever wanted to have your own radio program on WEFT? We have another round of Airshifter training coming up. It's going to be on Sunday, March 24th at 3 p.m. And just so you know, Airshifter is what we call our radio hosts because you are in charge of your own show. We don't tell you what to do on your program, whether it be a music program or a talk show. WEFT's Airshifter training is a great place to start if you're wanting to learn all about hosting your own show on WEFT. That first training is simply a classroom training. So we get together in the great hall at the station and have some snacks and chat about what happens here, what the rules are, what the processes are, and answer questions about what goes on at the station and how everything works. To get in on this next round of training, go to weft.org and download the Airshifter training application. That information is, there's a link to it right on that front page. Or you can send an email to airshiftertraining@weft.org and get more information that way. We'll send you an application and answer any questions that you may have. Also, WEFT is also looking for new volunteers. And if you're trying to find a volunteer opportunity that fits your schedule, volunteer at WEFT. The station has a variety of possibilities if you're looking for something ongoing or simply a one-time opportunity. Volunteer to help with answering emails or sending out thank you postcards. If you have graphic art skills, you can design a WEFT t-shirt. Staff the WEFT booth at a community event like Friday Night Live, Pride Fest, or CU Days, which I must say is a blast to do. Or you could help with the next WEFT fundraising drive happening later this spring. Actually, that starts next week. Or you can tell us what you'd like to do and we'll find a fit. To learn more, you can call the station at 217-359-9338 or send an email to stationmanager@weft.org. Last announcement from me. If you have an old car, truck, motorcycle, or boat that you'd like to get rid of, you can donate that vehicle to Charitable Adult Rides and Services and designate WEFT to receive the proceeds from your gift. I think it was last year, people who donated to Charitable Adult Rides and Services ended up giving almost $5,000 to WEFT in the form of those donations. Now, the vehicles don't actually come to the station, so don't think about dropping your car off here. But you do need to have a clear title. You contact Charitable Adult Rides and Services. They pick up the vehicle, haul it away with no charge to you. It's easy to make arrangements on their website at careasy.com. or you can call 855-500-RIDE. That's 855-500-7433. And remember, tell them that you want WEFT to receive the proceeds. Thank you very much, and I hope you have a good evening.
This hour of programming on WEFT is brought to you in part by The Canopy Club, hosting live music and events within Champaign-Urbana. The Canopy Club offers a variety of music ranging from rock to electronic, hip-hop, indie, theme nights, and anything in between. Find more information